to Galatians chapter 5. We're going to be through with Galatians before too long. We're down to winding down into the kind of closing remarks. This morning, you remember that Paul had encouraged the Galatians to stand fast in the liberty of Christ, and we define that in this context, meaning free from the old covenant, free from the Mosaic law. And he encouraged them not to become entangled again in that old law. And he has warned the Galatians that they are dealing with a most serious issue. This isn't something to just be dismissed. Oh, well, you know, a few of you want to be circumcised to be saved. Well, we won't really worry about that. No, this is a serious issue. It's the issue of law versus grace. And, of course, this is a life and death issue. If you seek to be justified by the law or by works, then you are not on your way to heaven. We have already seen that the law brings a curse on fallen man. So if you're seeking to be saved on the basis of the law, you're under a curse. The law curses. It says in Galatians 3:10, "For as many as are under the works of the law are under the curse." And so it's extremely critical that we understand the importance of clinging to the true doctrine of salvation by grace. Paul thought it was important enough, the issue was important enough, that he wrote the entire book of Hebrews and the book of Galatians to warn about going back under this Jewish law. And in addition to that, he wrote the book of Romans, which is largely about the proposition of salvation by grace. So, and then in addition to those three books, virtually every epistle in the New Testament is instructive regarding the doctrine of salvation by grace. It's absolutely everywhere in the Bible. There's no other kind of salvation. God either saves by grace or He doesn't save at all. So we come to our text now this afternoon, and we will see how harshly Paul refers to the false teachers who have come in to the Galatians and were advocating a return to the law. We're in Galatians 5:7. The first thing that I want you to see here in Galatians 5:7 is the changed condition of the Galatians. You will notice in verse 7, it says, "You did run well." That was their previous condition. And he says, "Who hindered you that you should not obey the truth?" So you see in verse 7 that they were running well at first, and now they're not obeying the truth. So their condition has certainly changed. It appears that as long as Paul was with the Galatians, they were doing fine. They were under the doctrine of grace. It would have been hard if Paul was your preacher or your instructor in the Scriptures. It would have been hard to get away from the doctrines of grace. He was the great sovereign grace preacher. And he says they were running well. So, you may remember that in the book of Hebrews, the writer used that metaphor of running a race. Do you remember that? Hebrews chapter 12. And Paul uses the same metaphor in 1 Corinthians, where he says we're running this race. And here he tells the Galatians, "You were running well." As far as he could tell, the Galatians were running the race well at first. Apparently, what he meant by that was that they were living by faith. They were living with a good understanding of God's grace in Christ. And most importantly, they were not being entangled with that old Jewish religion. It seems that they were, at least at first, casting their hope in the pure gospel of grace in Christ. And they were running the race well. But somewhere along the line, the Galatians deviated. Verse 7 says, "Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth?" So they stopped obeying the truth as Paul had preached to them. They were running well, and then they changed. Here it says they stopped obeying the truth. Now, it's apparent from Paul's arguments in the entire book of Galatians that they had turned from the doctrines of grace to some other form of doctrine. They had turned to justification by the what? By the law. And in turning to the law, they had stopped running well, according to Paul. Now, notice here in verse 7, it says, "You did run well, but who did hinder you?" So Paul claims that they were hindered. That Greek word is anakopto. Now, this word carries with it the idea of beating someone back with a stick. So every time a person would try to take a step forward, there'd be someone there to beat you back, sort of like defending against you making progress. And in the context of a race, which he's just said, you were running well, but someone hindered you. So if they were running a race, it's kind of like someone running out. You were running quite well around the track. Maybe you were winning the race. You were in first place. And then someone jumps out of the stands and knocks you off the course. And that's the idea here when it says that they hindered you. You were running well. Who hath hindered you? You know, when you're running a race, by the way, all it takes is to just be knocked off stride for a second and you'll lose the race, particularly a short race. There was a famous football game a few years ago. Most of you may not remember this if you're not football fans, but a runner had broken free. He was running down the sideline and he was obviously going for a touchdown. He was ahead of all the defenders. And suddenly one of the opposing coaches darted out from the sidelines and tackled the runner. It was a very odd play, but the runner was illegally hindered from running for a touchdown. And this is sort of the idea here in Galatia. Someone has fouled the Galatians. They have come onto the track and hindered them from running properly. And Paul would like to take names. You notice here in verse 7, he says, "You did run well, who?" Who did hinder you? Let me write this down because I want to have a little talk with these folks. Who did hinder you? It seems that Paul had his notepad out and he wanted to know who these men were who came in and knocked the Galatians off stride. And I suspect that if Paul got names, that he eventually would confront them somewhere down the line. Do you remember a couple of occasions where Paul made confrontations in the book of Galatians? The first one was when Paul marched down to Jerusalem and confronted the elders over this issue of circumcision. And remember, he took Titus with him and he said, "Now, are you guys going to make Titus get circumcised?" And so he confronted them. Then the second confrontation that he had was when Peter came to Antioch. And Paul confronted Peter in front of everybody and said, "Wait a minute, why are you not eating with the Gentiles? Why have you gone back to kosher foods?" So Paul probably would have found these Jewish teachers if he could have and twisted their necks off. That's how strong his feelings were against these false teachers. Now, it's interesting here that Paul is being somewhat gracious to the Galatians, but he is prone to place the blame on the false teachers. Let me just give you two or three examples of here of how he speaks well of the Galatians. He says in verse 7, "You did run well." So that's sort of a commendation. "I'm proud of you the way that you were running previously." And then also notice in verse 10, he says, "I have confidence in you through the Lord." So Paul did have some confidence in the Galatians. They were his children in the faith. They were his converts. Oh, he loved them. And so his tendency here is to say, wait a minute, I'm going to be gracious to you Galatians who are tempted to go under the law, but I'm going to put the blame on these false teachers. So he does it that way. You'll notice in verse 8 that Paul apparently felt that they were called of God. Look in verse 8. This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. So he's giving them, the Galatians, the benefit of the doubt and saying, well, all right, let's assume God has called you. If God has called you, then the message of these false teachers is not from that God. So Paul's given them some credit here. Now let's take a look at the source of this false doctrine. Look at verse 8. This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. Now Paul calls this error the persuasion. What is the error? What is the error we're dealing with here in Galatians? Going back under the law, and in particular, observing this rite of circumcision. He says, this persuasion is not of him that calleth you. So the persuasion was the teaching that justification is by the law. It was the teaching that the Gentiles must be circumcised to be saved. In effect, it was the teaching that the Gentiles must become Jews. It is called this persuasion. And Paul says this persuasion does not come from God. It does not come from the one that calleth you. Now, this is a nice way of saying it comes from whom? The devil. If it doesn't come from God, it basically comes from the devil. There are two points of view, one from God and one from the devil. Whatever is not of God comes from him, the devil. And of course, the devil has always been a cunning persuader, hasn't he? He persuaded Adam and Eve to sin. And Paul calls this a persuasion. He comes in, the devil does, as an angel of light. And he persuades and he deceives. So that if it were possible, the Bible says, even the elect would be saved. And Paul says, this persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. Now these false teachers came in not from God, but from God's great adversary. And do you remember in what kind of attitude they came in? The false teachers, when they came to the churches, they came in zealously. You remember? Zealously. They came with great zeal. And it says that they zealously affected the Galatians. They sort of gathered them in and persuaded them and in their zeal and their passion. All right, so well, this passage here would seem to suggest to me, and hopefully to you, that anyone who opposes the grace of God in salvation is not of God. Isn't that what he tells them here? This persuasion is not of the one that calleth you. So if anyone tries to teach us that we have to do this or that to be saved, that persuasion does not come of God. Anyone who would advocate that salvation is by works is not of God. Anyone who extends circumcision or baptism or ceremonies as the way of salvation is not of God. And there's lots of religions out there that do that. They say you must be baptized to be saved. Anyone who teaches that heaven is gained by witnessing, who would that be? Jehovah's Witnesses? That's not from God. Anyone that would tell you that paying money to the church gets you to heaven, that's not from God. Anyone that tells you that you must go and have mediation by a human priest is not of God. Anyone who says that salvation is gained in any measure by the work of man is coming from some other source but God. God operates by grace. The gospel that says that man is helpless is the gospel that comes from God. the gospel that says that man is dead in trespasses and sins is the gospel that comes from God. The gospel that says that man is not dead comes from another source, doesn't it? I want you to take a look at the danger of the doctrine of justification by law. Now, obviously, when false teachers come in, whether they come into our church or any other church, they will start with a little error. And I'm sure that these Jewish teachers didn't march right into the churches and advocate a rejection of Christ and a return to Judaism in full. Rather, they advocated that the Galatians adopt one rite of Judaism. And what was that? Circumcision. Now, they didn't immediately tell the Galatians to start bringing animal sacrifices. They started with a little Judaism in hopes of alienating them from Paul and from Christ. But look what it says about a little error, a little doctrinal error in Galatians 5:9. Galatians 5:9 says, "A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump." Now, the false teachers had introduced a little leaven into the Galatian lump. But the whole lump was beginning to become leavened. Look at Galatians 4:10. Now, circumcision was the original issue, but soon the Galatians were even doing other religious, Jewish religious rituals. Look at Galatians 4:10. "I have confidence in you through the Lord that you will be..." Excuse me, it's Galatians 4:10. 4:10 says, "Ye observe days and months and times and years." So apparently these Jewish teachers came in advocating circumcision, and one thing led to another, and pretty soon the Galatian Gentiles are observing the Jewish days. So the Galatians apparently saw no harm in deviating a little bit from the doctrine of justification by faith. And they probably said, "What does it hurt if we placate the Jews in this matter? After all, it's good to keep everyone happy." Not in terms of doctrine, it isn't. That's, what do we call that when we try to make everybody fall under one umbrella? Anybody know the big word? Ecumenicalism, where we just try to accept everybody under the fold, no matter what they believe. Let's compromise here and there so that we can all worship together as one. But Paul says, "A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump." The gospel is not compromisable. As Paul said, a compromised gospel is not the gospel at all. Do you remember that? Way back in Galatians 1, where he says they're preaching another gospel, but it's really not another gospel. In fact, he said, "Let them be accursed if they preach something else." So there is no such thing as compromising the gospel. Now, when someone brings a little bit of error in, does the error pervert the lump, or does the lump cure the error? The error spreads, doesn't it? And so Paul is saying here, be careful about a little bit of error, because a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. And that's what it'll do to our doctrine. Once we start messing up, if we have little errors, then, of course, little errors become bigger errors, and eventually the whole lump is leavened. Now, getting close to the end here, take a look at Galatians 5:10, and I want you to see the judgment that is facing the false teachers. You see, in Galatians 5:10, Paul says, "But he that troubleth you shall bear his judgment, whoever he be." Apparently, Paul has not gotten names yet, because he says, whoever they are, they're going to be judged. It seems that Paul is not willing to be forgiving toward the false teachers. He's quick to be forgiving of the Galatians, but not of the false teachers. Paul is confident that the false teachers are troublemakers. You see that in verse 10? He that troubleth you. And he is confident that they are not from God. Remember? They don't come from he that calleth you. And he assures the Galatians that there is judgment waiting for them. Now, Peter also had a similar view toward false teachers. Keep your finger in Galatians, but go over to 2 Peter. 2 Peter. And 2 Peter chapter 2, the first three verses. And Peter says, "But there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privately shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of." You see how a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump there? "And through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not." So there's coming swift judgment upon the false teachers for sure. Now, let me read you a quote from Martin Luther here. Martin Luther, in his commentary on Galatians, pointed out that Paul was quite forgiving of people who made errors during their life, sins. If they fell into sin, Paul was very gracious to them, but he was most unforgiving of errors in doctrine. Listen to what Martin Luther says. "I cannot say it often enough that we must carefully differentiate between doctrine and life," he calls it. "Doctrine," he says, "is a piece of heaven. Life is a piece of earth. Life is sin, error, uncleanness, misery. And charity or love must forbear, believe, hope, and suffer all things." He's quoting 1 Corinthians 13. "Forgiveness of sins must be continuous so that sin and error may not be defended and sustained. But with doctrine," he says, "there must be no error, no need of pardon. There can be no comparison between doctrine and life. The least little point of doctrine is of greater importance than heaven and earth. Therefore, we cannot allow the least jot of doctrine to be corrupted. We may overlook the offenses and errors of life, for we daily sin much. Even the saints sin," he says, "as they themselves confess in the Lord's Prayer. Lord, forgive us our trespasses. But our doctrine, God be praised, is pure, because all the articles of our faith are grounded on the Holy Scriptures." So I think, to summarize, he was saying that it's hard to forgive errors in doctrine. And we should not be quick to forgive errors in doctrine. So Paul says judgment is coming on the false teachers. Now, I want to show you something else here. We're down to Galatians 5:11. I'd like for you to see the sign of the true gospel message. If you read verse 11, what would you say is the sign that the true gospel is being preached? Persecution. It says, "And I, brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of the cross ceased." Now here is one of the signs of the true gospel. It results in offense and persecution. This was especially true of the gospel in the early church. The gospel was highly offensive to the Jews, because the gospel brought an end to what? Judaism and the law. The gospel said, take down the temple. The gospel said, remove the altar. The gospel said, disengage the priesthood. The gospel said, bring in the Gentiles. Now, this was as offensive as it could possibly be for the Jews. And therefore, the preaching of the gospel resulted in great persecution from the Jews. Now, Paul himself had been a Judaizer, a Jew, and he had been a persecutor of the church. He dragged Christians, men and women, and presumably children, from their homes and killed them. And now Paul was the main target of the Jews. And the Jews would have killed Paul, probably on many occasions, had God not supernaturally preserved Paul's life many times. Let me read you 2 Corinthians 11:24-25. Paul says, of the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes save one. Now, 40 stripes save one was tantamount to taking a person to the point of death. And they backed off. They saved that one, hoping that he wouldn't die. So 39 lashes would pretty much take a person all the way to the point of death. He says, of the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes, save one. Three times was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. They left him for dead. God raised him or preserved his life. He says, three times I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day have I been in the deep. And he goes on and describes all of the sufferings which he had undergone. So, in this particular context, Paul is saying that if Paul had simply preached circumcision, then he would not have been persecuted by the Jews. If he had just let them circumcise Titus, and if Paul had just gone along with this idea that, okay, it's Jesus plus circumcision, he would have placated the Jews and they would have said, that's fine, Paul, and they would not have persecuted him. And there would have been no offense of the cross. But the cross says no. No circumcision. No law keeping. Salvation is by grace, and therefore it was offensive to the law keepers. The gospel says it's Christ and nothing else. The cross of Christ does not allow for any other way of salvation. It does not allow Judaism to continue. Now, since Paul preached Christ and Him crucified, since Paul preached Christ only, since Paul preached that the Jewish religion was abolished, Paul was persecuted. Now, lastly, we're going to make it. This part is a little risque. I hope you will forgive me, but it's here in the Scriptures. There's a little sarcasm toward the false teachers. I'd like for you to see this. This is in verse 12. It says in 5:12, Galatians 5:12, it says, I would that they, the false teachers, were even cut off, which trouble you. Now, this phrase, cut off, is the Greek word apokapto. It means to amputate or to mutilate, especially with regard to bodily parts. Back in Mark 9:43, you will remember there's a verse that says, if thy foot offend thee, what? Cut it off, apokapto. Let me pronounce it right, apokapto. And then two verses later, if thy foot offend thee, apokapto. When Peter cut the man's ear off and smote the high priest's servant, he cut his, it says he cut it off. He apokaptoed it. Now, in this passage, Paul is defending the true gospel against the doctrine of circumcision. And so circumcision is at issue here, and the Jewish teachers are advocating that the Gentiles must cut off their foreskins in order to be saved. And sarcastically, Paul responds with a bit of crude sarcasm here. He says, I wish that even you were amputated. Not just your foreskins, but just cut it all off. I would that they were even cut off which trouble you. Paul says, I wish that they would just go ahead and castrate themselves. They want to use the knife on you. Let them go ahead and turn the blade on themselves. And don't stop with a mere circumcision. Let them go ahead and mutilate themselves. So you see how strongly Paul feels against these Jewish teachers, such as the severity that is wished upon those who would pervert the gospel. Paul says, let them be castrated. Now, Paul also perhaps implied that let them be cut off from the church. They need to be cut off from the church. They need to be sent out. They don't need to be in the church teaching salvation by law keeping. And so perhaps he's implying let them also be cut off from the church. Let final judgment come upon them. Let them be counted among the damned. Such is the importance of the gospel of Christ. Okay, we'll stop right there. And we are now up to Galatians 5:13, and we'll continue on next week on that.